Do as I do. Jesus is the great example, not the exclusive exception. And Martella Wetzet writes about this verse, in this radical statement, Jesus reveals to you and to me that we have the same Christ nature as he. Light. Light makes the invisible visible, the unformed formed, the hidden revealed, and the unknown known. Light symbolizes divine illumination, the divine light we are by virtue of our oneness with the source. And this means that all of us, we truly do have as our nature luminosity. We absolutely, our true nature is luminous. And as that Christ light expresses in us and through us, it does so through what Charles Fillmore called the 12 powers, sometimes described as gifts, abilities, pathways, or tools. These 12 powers are, of course, expression of the one power, the Christ, the divinity and oneness within that Jesus perfectly demonstrated. The source of all power, of course, is God. And the 12 powers are the 12 fundamental aspects of our divine nature. And in Divine Audacity, Martella Wetzet reminds us, and many of you already know this, kind of a review, of three characteristics of these spiritual abilities. First of all, our powers are inherent. In other words, created in the image and likeness of God, these gifts are part of our spiritual inheritance. Like a new computer fully loaded with software, we come already loaded with these 12 powers. Secondly, however, even though our powers are inherent, they exist in potential until we recognize and activate them. Charles Fillmore used the archaic word quicken. And no, that's not a computer program that does your finances. It means to call forth, just as Jesus called forth his disciples, to call forth and develop. And the third characteristic is the powers have to be directed. Just like the software, we can learn how and when to use them. It's our choice. We can always turn our pivotal soul, our awareness, to the outer world, where we allow senses to determine our reality, or we can become centered in the indwelling Christ presence, where we recognize our spiritual nature and call forth powers far beyond our human capacity. So this week and next, we're going to explore two of the powers that are designed to work together. Today, we're going to look at the power of wisdom. To begin with, I'd like to ask you to think of someone you know personally whom you consider to be truly wise. Okay, everybody can think of somebody? All right, now I'd like you to think for a moment about what some of you are looking at one another, and that's wonderful. I like that. That's great. That's very good. I'd like you to think of a moment, for a moment, what characteristics does this person exhibit that you think makes them wise? Is the person you are picturing worldly wise? In other words, is he or she successful in business, career, volunteerism, the recipient of many accolades and awards? Or is it someone with lots of knowledge, well-read, intellectual, full of facts, ideas, and information? A lot of people equate informed minds with wisdom, but our co-founder, Charles Fillmore, would disagree. He writes in The Revealing Word, wisdom is intuitive knowing, spiritual intuition, the voice of God within as the source of our understanding, mental action, in other words, thinking, mental action based on the Christ truth. On the other hand, he writes, knowledge is acquaintance with facts and information. Intellectual knowledge is literal knowledge without consideration of spirit. He says, and for some of us, this is a shock, he says, the intellect is not wise. Wisdom is not its office. Intellect follows the letter of the law. It's hard for the intellect to recognize the spiritual I am. And maybe this is why we're told in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew Bible, in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 through 15, "Blessed are those who find wisdom, who gain understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better results than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her." Now, you will notice that wisdom is usually considered a feminine trait. However, remember, we all hold both masculine and feminine energies. So, this power of wisdom is our ability, and it's represented by the disciple James, I should say. It's our ability to judge, evaluate, discern, appraise, and apply what is known. Now, the original name used by Charles Fillmore in his first book, The 12 Powers, was judgment, the power of judgment. However, judgment sort of fell out of vogue during the late 20th century because judgment became synonymous with being judgmental, and that's not what the power is about at all, although it can be used that way. One of my teachers at the Village always said, "In our human consciousness, we are judgment machines." Find that to be true? We really are. We have to watch that. But like all of our spiritual powers, wisdom can be expressed from spiritual or personal consciousness. In personal consciousness, we tend to judge others based on appearances, gender, age, race, occupation, nationality, religion, social class, dialect, just to name a few. Concerning dialect, I have a really good friend who grew up in the South, and she always says, "If you speak Southern, people think you're stupid." So that's what she thinks at any rate. That's her experience. And I know some of you have heard the story about a man who had two new neighbors move in at the same time. And on the left, the neighbor who moved in came over one morning and said to the man was on his porch reading the paper, and the new neighbor said, "Neighbor, can you tell me what kind of people live in this town? The reason I'm asking is the people in my old town were so wonderful. They were cooperative. They were sweet. They would just do anything for you. And my wife and I miss them so much." And the gentleman said, "Well, neighbor, you are in luck. I've got good news for you. You're going to find exactly the same people in this town." And the next day, the person from the other side came over, asked the same question, but he asked it in anger. And he said, "The reason I'm asking is because those people in my old neighborhood were horrible. They were uncooperative, unfriendly, really a bunch of jerks. Losers, losers." And the man looked at the neighbor and he said, "Well, neighbor, I've got bad news for you. That's exactly what you're going to find here." And the moral of that story, of course, is that we absolutely do. We do just hold what we already believe in our consciousness, and then that's what we see, and that's what gets reinforced. And so, really, our judgments are our lens. What we focus on, when we focus on what we already believe, we experience what we expect. And another negative connotation to this word judgment is the concept of Judgment Day. Judgment Day, that fateful day in the future when God will bring out his big book of all our recorded sins and meet our punishment accordingly. Martella Whitsitt says, "This belief in a judgment day looms over literalists in Judaism, Islam, and Christianity." And Charles Fillmore explains, and this is interesting, that the New Testament Bible translators are responsible for what he calls the Great Judgment Day bugaboo. In every instance where Jesus used the word for judgment, the original text was "in a day of judgment." But the translators changed it to "in the day of judgment," making it seem like that this judgment was a definite point in the future instead of just repeated incidences in our lives, our daily lives. In other words, here's the truth. Every day is Judgment Day. And that's why it's important for us to use wisdom and right judgment. David Williams writes in 12 Powers in You, "We sit on the bench in the courtroom of our minds. We make judgments and choices. We make rulings. We hand down decrees. We decree a thing and it becomes our reality. We can say as we get up in the morning, I dread today. I know it's going to be a horrible day. Or we can wake up and no matter what is going on in our outer world, we can say it's a beautiful day in my consciousness and I go to meet my good. The difference is not in the day. The difference is in our judgment and choice. So, will our judgments be wise or otherwise? Will we see the glass half empty or half full? Do rose bushes have thorns or do thorn bushes have roses? Are our new neighbors in our neighborhoods decent, hardworking people, or are they criminals, drug dealers, and terrorists? Someone cuts us off on the highway in the morning going to work. That ever happened to you? I'll bet it has. Do we react in anger, silently calling them names, or even worse, screaming out loud to them? Or do we send them a blessing, and not one with our finger, okay? Using judgment at the level of the ego can backfire on us. It really can. Not only is it really incorrect, Charles Fillmore said, when judgment is based on sense perception, its conclusions are fallible. But when it's based on spiritual understanding, they are safe. And so it really can backfire on us to use judgment at the level of ego. It not only causes high blood pressure and ulcer and gives us tension and all sorts of physical ramifications, but Paul Hesselbeck reminds us of the old saying, when you point a finger at someone else, there are three pointing back at you. And you know, we all know, something we teach in Unity, thoughts held in mind with feeling produce their own mind in our consciousness. So negative judgments of others held in mind can really affect us. When we constantly slander and slur others, we slur and slander ourselves. And Jesus is quoted as saying, an often quoted thing that he said was, do not judge or you too will be judged. That's from Matthew 7:1, from the Sermon on the Mount again. But didn't Jesus call the Pharisees hypocrites and vipers? And didn't Jesus throw the money changers out of the temple? That sounds like judgment to me. But what it really means is defined by Bible scholar Ed Townley, who says, Jesus in this advice is helping us see that it is all too easy expending our energy judging others. And Jesus follows just two lines after this with, and you all familiar with this verse, why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the log in your own eyes? When we judge harshly, we are seeing through our human eyes, which means our perspective is at least as flawed as the person we are judging. And in John 7:21, Jesus says, do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment. What do you think Jesus means by right judgment? What do you think? Well, clearly not human judgment. I think he means looking past our senses, looking past appearances, looking past our childhood messages and societal judgments to a greater truth. And here's the good news. Here's the wonderful news, actually. We all have the God-given innate power to judge rightly. It is in our spiritual DNA to see ourselves and others as God sees us, to behold the Christ in everyone. And when we do, we are in that heaven consciousness that Jesus talked about so often, and we live in a state of harmony, peace, and well-being. It's a win-win. And another aspect of the power of wisdom is called discernment. Now, Charles Fillmore defines discernment as our ability to know that which is spiritual. Whitsitt says, discernment is our ability not to rely on facts, but upon principles in spiritual decision-making. So she defines some ways we can do that. In spiritual practice, we exercise discernment when we question, reflect, meditate, and envision divine ideas. We suspend our human judgments and learn to live with the questions. I actually had a sign when I taught children above the encyclopedias in those days that said, live with the question. When we learn to live with the question, then we learn to wait for the answers, to wait for the guidance. This means we allow questions space and time to percolate beyond our own human conscious thinking. And actually, I'm proud to say this is exactly what our First Unity Board does in making decisions about what's good for the church and its future. We weigh decisions considering the degree to which they are aligned with spiritual principles, and this also works beautifully in our personal lives. And finally, the most important characteristic of wisdom is what we call intuition. And no, it's not just for women. It's for all of us, okay? Charles Fillmore defines intuition as the immediate apprehension of spiritual truth without resort to intellectual means. So here again, it's that wisdom versus knowledge piece. It's heart wisdom. It's wisdom felt from our Christ center. The ability to go within and hear that still, small voice. Gandhi said, God speaks to us every day, only we don't know how to listen. And this kind of listening takes prayer, it takes time in the silence, and it takes practice. Intuition has been called our sixth sense, our inner compass. An internal guidance system, I'm calling it today. And you know what? Your GPS might fail you. Mine has. Have you ever been on a road you weren't familiar with and heard, well, we have lost signal? You're going, well, help, what do we do next? But here's the thing. Your IGS, your internal guidance system, will never fail you. So I'm going to ask this question. How many of you have struggled with a problem, read everything you could get your hands on, scanned the internet, consulted all your friends, took a poll, and then when you least expect it, an answer appeared? Raise your hand if that's ever happened to you. So many times that's how our answers come. Well, that answer that came to you through your power of wisdom, bringing you divine inspiration and guidance. Some call it an aha moment. Actually, sometimes it's an uh-oh moment. I'll describe one of those in a minute that I had this week. It may come long after your time of prayer and meditation. Often it does. And it may come in a myriad of ways. It might come as an image, a picture that flies into your head, a dream, a song on the radio, or a sign that you pass on the highway. It could be a clear directive, or it could be a warning, like, don't go there. I had one of those don't go there warnings this week. Just a few days ago, I sat down at my computer and emailed the minister in charge of this field licensing program that I'm in the middle of to ask when I would be receiving more specific information about my responsibilities. And I got back a really nice email that said, soon. Well, wasn't exactly sure what soon meant. And I knew that one particular requirement, which is like a four-hour, really complex test, has to be emailed back 2 weeks before I go in March. So I grabbed my calendar, counted the days, factored in all the other responsibilities, and did the only logical thing a person could do. I panicked. In my strictly human consciousness, I sat down and crafted an email, a real pitiful email saying, you don't know me, but I've never asked for an extension in my life, and if I don't get this test soon, I won't be able to do this, and on and on and on. And I was right in the middle of it, and all of a sudden, I'm not kidding you, I felt a jolt. It was like an electrical charge. I can't even say if it was a word or an image, but it was one word, and the word was wait. Wait. Just one word. And so I deleted that email, and I sent another one instead, thanking the person in charge and saying I was just praying that I could receive the test soon. And guess what? The very next morning at 8 a.m., my proctor was emailed the test. See, it's just an example of stopping and listening to that guidance. Now, in my case, it was really a strong flash of intuition, but in some other cases, it hasn't been so strong. And one of the most frequent questions asked about our wisdom ability is, and see if you've ever asked this, how can I be sure if this intuition is from God or if it's from my own personal ego and fear? And Unity Minister Ellen Davenport addresses this quandary beautifully in an article that many of you have seen before, because I've shared it in a lot of classes. And if you just Google it, because I'm just giving you a little piece of it. Google it. It's a great article. It's called God, Is That You Calling? And she says, the Bible makes it sound so easy. Moses had his burning bush. Adam and Eve met God strolling through the garden. Isaiah had visions. And Samuel heard God calling in the night. Jesus taught that God is within, always present. Clearly, the Bible's vivid descriptions of hearing God's voice represent intuition. Moses and all the others might have had those mystical, dramatic experiences, but they certainly had an inner knowing, an inner voice, and the sense to listen. And we've all experienced that aha experience, but they may leave us wondering, these are at Davenport's words, they may leave us wondering whether or not it is divine. And she says, sometimes the only option is to trust the voice, follow the guidance, and see what happens. However, here are some ways to test whether our impulses are really divine. First of all, she says, God never asks us to harm anyone. Now, divine inspiration is always a win-win for everyone, working for the highest good of all, even if it isn't immediately evident. Secondly, she says, often, and I would honestly say not always, but often, if it's divine inspiration, things just seem to fall into place. Doors open miraculously. We move ahead without a lot of struggle. That doesn't mean we always see the big picture, because sometimes the lantern of faith shines only a few feet ahead. But it feels right. It feels right. And also, sometimes our flash of insight may be an idea we have never consciously entertained at all. It may feel more like an assignment, not an option. And people argue with God, like Moses, who said, "Who, me?" I can relate to that one. Who? Have any of you ever done that? You know, who, me? I can't do this. It can't be me. You can't be asking me to do this. We may be surprised by where we end up and how much we enjoy it when we trust our inner intuition. Or we may be guided to fulfill a long-time desire, a lifelong desire, something we never thought was possible. Davenport notes that if it's truly divine inspiration, if we're being called to carry out some divine idea, the inspiration won't go away. It will keep resurfacing to us in books, in dreams, in conversations, in movies, you'll just see it every place until we pay attention. And finally, and I think this is the most important one of all, finally, we eventually stop asking if we've heard God's voice. The question no longer has meaning for us. We simply know. We know that we know that we know. And the questions, is it me, is it God, seem redundant. It is I, it is God expressing as me. God and I are one, it is oneness. And so, when we use our amazing power of wisdom, we evaluate, discern, and apply all the spiritual truths we know. And we make decisions and choices that harmonize, uplift, and unify. We dwell in peace, joy, and strength. We are the love and light of the world, and we let our light shine. We dare to let our light shine. So now, let us affirm the source of that light, the source of that love, and the source of our wisdom. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.